I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Hope you're having a good March. Hope it's a nicer weather than it has been.
It's nice weather today.
Yeah, it's very nice today. Molly's been hard at work. And I've been doing more evil killers. And among other things. And I've been doing... they're republishing my book on Frederick West, so that's been a bit of effort on that, which should be over fairly soon, and it'll be out in the summer. It's been a very, you know, interesting period, a bit frustrating. I kept trying to update my phone, which didn't seem to work terribly well. Every time I ordered one over the phone, it didn't come, so I go into the shop and say, could I have a phone? No worries at all, we'll sort all that out. No, it doesn't come. I was just so frustrating.
But you've got a new phone now.
Yes, and Molly's very carefully updating it from the old onto the new.
I'm trying anyway.
Well, it's a lot better than I'd be doing, that's for sure. That's absolutely certain.
Having some tech issues this morning, aren't we?
Yes, we've got a few tech issues this morning. Our computer wasn't exactly happy with us. But I did go to the most beautiful memorial service this week. I went to the memorial service of my dear old friend Geoffrey Palmer, actor, of course, and simply one of the nicest, sweetest men. As Time Goes By, he'd made a long series with Judi Dench.
I love that show.
Simply wonderful. He was the best straight man I've ever seen. His comic timing was sublime. He could hold a look or change it. And my favourite Geoffrey Palmer story is when they're filming, he and Judy are filming, and she forgets a line or she corpses, he would stop with an absolute straight face and say something like, is Maggie Smith available?
Funny.
Eileen Atkins, perhaps? He would just pursue the joke and she would burst into even more fits of laughter.
That's very funny. I'm glad it was a nice service.
It was absolutely lovely. Dame Penelope Wilson, who knew him for a very long time, and Janie D sang A Nightingale sang in Berkeley Square, which was lovely. And my old friend William Godfrey played the piano to accompany her.
Oh, nice.
And also did Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage, Mrs. Worthington.
You all would have loved that.
And we did. It was very, very, very good. And it was packed. Not apparently as many as there might have been because of this outbreak of COVID. You know, people are sort of still isolating a bit. But
Was it?
It was at St. Paul's.
Oh.
Congo.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yep.
Very nice.
Absolutely wonderful. Very nice. Damn, the acoustic there really is not very good, though. It's a funny, funny place, and the acoustic is odd. Oh, partly also because my hearing is going, but there you go. But it was terrific, and I was very lucky. And sat with lots of friends who knew him, and it was just delicious.
That's nice.
And he would have loved it.
Well, that's the main thing.
Yeah, he chose all the songs and the music.
That
himself.
Does not surprise me.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Excellent.
He did it all. Anyway, this week, Molly kindly sent me a list of suggestions, as you know, and I chose one which I really didn't know very much about at all. And it was suggested by Tracy Daly on Instagram. And it's an unsolved case of murder.
Okay.
And I think it's very good.
What's it called?
I think we should call it The Murder of Janet Brown.
The Murder of Janet Brown. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. Janet Brown was an upright, very nice lady of 51 years of age. She lived in a village which I've actually been to, Radnage in Buckinghamshire, which, believe it or not, has rather a fine pub called the Mash Inn. I think it was once called the Red Lion, but it's a real gastro pub. It's quite hard to find. It's 7 or 8 miles outside High Wycombe, through a lot of country lanes. And Janet Brown lived there with her husband, Graham, and they had 3 adult children. They lived in a farmhouse with 11 acres called Hill Farm on Spriggs Holly Lane. Now, Janet was born in 1944, and we're now talking about April 1995. We should also say that she was a primary care research nurse at Oxford University. She was a bright, bright lady. Her husband, Graham, was an executive for Ciba Geigy, the pharmaceutical company, and he worked a lot of the time in Switzerland. Well, there's a little bit of background to this. Near the local area, there'd been a spate of burglaries, and some of the homeowners had installed panic buttons to make an alarm sound inside the house and outside, and they'd formed their own more recent neighbourhood watch scheme. So you could see this is a community a little bit on edge. It's a Monday evening, the 10th of April, 1995. Janet Brown is at home alone. Her husband's in Switzerland. Her eldest daughter was at university. And her, as was her son. But the youngest daughter was actually all of a sudden staying with a friend. Her friend had just passed her driving test and had decided to celebrate. And Janet's daughter decided to stay over with her that night. I think there was some feeling by her friend's mother that perhaps it wouldn't be a wise idea on the day you pass your driving test to be driving about the lanes of Buckinghamshire.
Mm-hmm.
So she stayed the night. The last telephone call that Janet Brown made was after 8:20 p.m. The clocks have gone forward, so it's only just beginning to get dusk. Now we enter the mystery. At some point after 8:20 and probably before 10:20, an intruder, or perhaps 2, broke into Hill Farm, and they did it via the patio doors, which were sliding glass. There were 2 sets. The first set, he or they used a glass cutter to make an entry. The second set, they simply broke. There was no evidence of a struggle. But what is abundantly clear is at some point that evening, Janet Brown triggered the panic button in her bedroom. But the killer or killers were not put off. The outside alarm rang for 20 minutes. The internal one didn't stop. It just went on and on and on.
So no one came?
No one came. The killer or killers, and I'll keep them in the plural at the moment just for the avoidance of doubt, was perfectly calm and indeed washed the blood off in the sink in the bathroom upstairs near the bedroom. Janet was handcuffed, gagged, and then beaten across the head with a blunt instrument, possibly a crowbar. The police were later to call it an extremely brutal attack. The killer or killers were relaxed. As I say, they washed the blood off. They didn't rush. They didn't panic. And indeed, Janet's body was not discovered until just after 8:10 the following morning by two builders who were doing some renovations on the house. Janet's body was found naked at the bottom of the stairs. Now, there are so many unanswered questions. Had she been getting ready for bed? Why was she? There was no evidence of any kind of struggle. There was clear evidence, however, that she'd been subdued. But she's found by two builders. Now, there are many, many unanswered questions in this story. One of them is that the house was being prepared for sale. There's no clear evidence why that was, nor is any clear evidence about any financial difficulties. There was no evidence of any kind of sexual assault, and there was no evidence of any burglary, although the television set and the video recorder, we are talking about 1995, had both been unplugged. Was that ready to be transported? We simply don't know. What we do know is that the killer or killers had come well prepared. They brought two different kinds of duct tape, handcuffs, glass cutter. This was carefully planned. But it wasn't a burglary. There had been a spate of local burglaries, but there wasn't. There was no sign of a burglary. The police investigation was, pay full credit to Thames Valley, thorough. There was no evidence of an extramarital affair. There was no evidence of any hostility in the family. There was clear and positive evidence that Janet's husband, Graham, was indeed in Switzerland the night she died. It was a truly interesting and fascinating cold case. Perhaps we should also say that there were no suggestions of industrial espionage, which I think one of the suggestions that came up had something to do with her husband's job. But the Thames Valley Police dismissed the concept that it could be a contract killing. I don't know why they would do that, because it, to some extent, it looks like one to me. But nevertheless, they did, and they ruled it out. They also ruled in the fact that it was someone with local knowledge, because it was such an isolated, in 11 acres. It's a big plot. It's 200 metres to the next house.
Yeah.
So that's a long way. Did they know that she was going to be on her own? Did they wait to make sure that her youngest daughter didn't come back? We don't know. We simply don't know. By 1997, 2 years, 2,700 people had been interviewed by the police without any success whatever. On the 20th anniversary of Janet's killing, in 2015, Thames Valley Police announced that they had isolated a DNA sample in the house, and that therefore they were going to test 700 local people.
700? That's a lot.
It is a lot. No match was found. On the 25th anniversary of Janet's death in 2020, the police announced they had another new DNA sample. Her youngest daughter, Janet's youngest daughter, Roxanne, who was then, by then 42, launched an appeal, and £20,000 reward was offered. The family are still waiting for an answer as to who killed Janet Brown. Some suggest that the killer is now dead, or the killer or killers is now dead. And in fact, the police at one point during the anniversary appeal said, it doesn't matter if you're a relative, we can check the DNA against you. In other words, you can have a family match.
Hmm.
One newspaper suggested that the reason that Janet was naked was that she'd been getting ready for bed. So it was after 10 o'clock, possibly.
Hmm.
And she'd neatly piled up her clothes when she was surprised by the killers. But why then was she found at the bottom of the stairs rather than in a bedroom?
Don't know.
Why was she handcuffed? If it's just a brutal, quick attack, why bother? Was there something she needed to tell them? Or did they think there was a safe? Or... And then it seems an incredibly blunt, sorry, no pun intended, a very blunt way of killing her. Hit her over the head with a crowbar.
Mm.
I mean, she's a 51-year-old lady. She's not exactly a danger.
Mm.
If
they were there to burgle, which they weren't.
Well, that would seem that they weren't. It's also important to say that the pathologist said that had they not bludgeoned her, she would have died because she was being asphyxiated by the duct tape. It was over her nose as well as her mouth. She would simply have died of asphyxiation. So it seems like overkill, doesn't it?
Hmm.
And to not only to potentially suffocate her, but then to absolutely hit her over the head repeatedly.
Just totally random.
Well, the internal alarm was still buzzing when the builders returned the following morning, the Tuesday morning, the 11th. The external alarm had gone off after 20 minutes, as it was programmed to do. Another fascinating little element of this case is that at one point her feet had been bound together, but they weren't bound together at the end. Oh, I can't. I don't.
Was it like an extortion gone wrong or something?
It could be, but who is trying to extort what?
I don't know.
It looks like something entirely random, out of the blue. We're talking about a little...
They could have got the wrong house.
Don't think so. This looks too careful. You know, they must have been watching the house, or he or they must have been watching the house.
Yeah.
The husband's away, the children are away. Her daughter would probably have come back, so they'd had to be careful watch. A lot of the village, and this is, we are talking about a hamlet, we're not really even talking about a village. There's a church, a pub, strung out houses. It's tiny and it's quite hard to find. It's also emerged later that the Browns were in the process of selling the house, which is why they had the builders in, because they wanted some renovations done to improve its value.
Mm.
Now, it's never been explained why they were trying to sell the house. So you have a real mystery. This is a cold case.
They might have been just downsizing.
Well, they could have been, exactly, because the children were all off to university and...
Change of scene.
Could be.
Or maybe there's loads of money somewhere. Maybe there's something dodgy going on.
Well, all we can say is that
We don't know what happened to Janet Brown.
We do not want to know what happened to Janet Brown. And I think I'm always fascinated by cases where there are unanswered questions. They know she made her last telephone call at 8:20. We know that her daughter had called her to tell her that she was staying with a friend who just passed a driving test. We know that that husband Graham is in Switzerland. We know the son and daughter at university. We don't know exactly why they were thinking of selling Hill Farm, as it was called. We know there was a certain amount of local uncertainty about the fact that there were some burglaries going on. But beyond that, we don't know anything. There was, of course, no CCTV, which would, this day and age, you know, houses of that isolated would almost certainly have installed some kind of CCTV, making the task of the killer or killers even more difficult. But there wasn't. And all tribute to Thames Valley Police. They've kept the case open. They've launched two appeals in 2015 and 2020. There is a substantial reward. And yet no one knows why this upright but rather reserved private lady, primary care research nurse at Oxford University, was killed on a Monday evening in April 1995.
So random. I've never heard about this case at all.
No, it's good, isn't it?
Mm.
And I suppose it's one of those ones that makes podcasts like this so interesting, because it asks as many questions as it answers.
Yeah, true.
It leaves you with that sense of, here's a apparently incredibly upright and responsible and a woman who doted on her family. She'd had three children. She was very proud of them.
Mm.
There were two cars parked outside the house. And out of the blue, someone or some people break in, subdue her, a lot. I mean, you talk about binding the feet as well as handcuffs and a gag and duct tape and all the rest. And then beat her over the head with what probably was a crowbar, certainly some blunt object. The murder weapon has never been found. There were no footprints, none of that classic one. I know he's got those star shapes on the bottom of his feet. You know,
Start making
plaster casts of not a trace of anything. And I think that makes this one of the most interesting unsolveds. It's like, in a way, it's like Mr. Kipper. And what really happened to Susie Lamplu? You know, what really happened to the cases that we can't quite put our finger on?
Jill Dando,
yes. I don't know. Yeah, Molly's shaking her head most eloquently.
the mystery.
It's true that
it is so odd when something just is totally unsolved, or
there's no obvious explanation.
Yeah.
Where is the motive here? That's why I slightly question whether or not this could have been an element of a contract killing.
It feels like there's something quite,
It just feels like it, doesn't it? There's something niggling.
Well, it's got to be something to do with money.
It feels like money. This was not about sex.
No,
there was
definitely
no sexual assault.
No.
It's got to be about money.
Mm.
Or it's got to be someone who's very angry about something.
Yeah.
But there was no evidence, as far as the police were concerned, of any irregularity in the marriage, no external affairs, no other man or angry husband or nothing. Nothing. As far as the villagers or the people, inhabitants of the hamlet of Radnage, she was the absolute upright, caring woman who had been a nurse, who became research nurse, you know, primary care.
Mm.
She didn't have a huge fortune.
It's very
odd. Who stood to benefit?
There must have been something going on with the husband or something.
Must be something somewhere.
Must be.
But, I mean, the villagers had all sorts... Sorry, the inhabitants had all sorts of theories, but none of which held up.
It's
I mean,
a mystery.
Classically, in a case like this, you ask yourself, who benefits? But the honest answer is,
don't know.
It doesn't seem like particularly. I mean, the house was owned jointly anyway. I think it's a perfect blood ties podcast.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And thank you, Tracy, for suggesting it.
Yeah, thank you.
I think I should also thank a lady who wrote to me this week and said, she's a teacher, and she said, I do like your podcasts. I listen to them when I go to bed, and I find your voice very soothing, so I often fall asleep. And I said, oh dear, don't you find the material a bit frightening? She's called Sarah, and I often have to go back and listen to the end, whilst occasionally nod off after a long day.
Perhaps we have a soporific effect.
That's perhaps what it is, Sarah, and others. We have a soporific effect. I was very touched. Been listening for over a year now. I listen to a lot of true crime, and nothing beats Blood Ties. Well, that's very, very kind of you, Sarah. Thank you. And she also recommends I look at a case that took place in Herefordshire. In Gloucestershire. Fairly local to her. And I promise faithfully to look back at that. I don't know whether this is my new phone or my old phone. This is my new phone.
That's your old phone.
It's my old phone, okay. So, Sarah, thank you, and I will look into Holly Gazzard.
I'll put it on the list.
I promise faithfully.
I will put it on the list.
Yes, so that is the case of the murder of Janet Brown.
That's very good. Thanks, Dad.
Yes, I think that is very interesting.
Mm.
A sort of thing that, you know, I think people very fascinated by who could have been what, you know, all those things that rotate around our minds when you come to murders. It's truly very good. I like that.
I agree. I enjoyed that. Thank you.
So, have you got an exciting week coming up? More hard work.
No, I think I'll be fine.
Oh, good-o. And Betsy isn't here today because she's staying in the country temporarily.
Yes, but she will be back soon.
She'll be back next time we do a podcast.
She will be back. And yeah, no, I don't have much. I went to a concert last night, which was very nice.
Good.
And I'm going to another one, different kind, next week.
I had lunch at the Guildhall.
Did you?
The Guildhall Dining Club.
Nice.
With the man who was once the sheriff of London. You can be sheriff, usually only sheriff for a year, but because of COVID, he did 2 years. Very nice man called Professor Michael Mainelli. And we talked a lot about the Old Bailey, because one of the jobs of the sheriff of London is to look after the Old Bailey, the Central Criminal Court. And we had a very jolly lunch, in which the food was excellent.
That's very good.
And I'd never been in that bit of the Guildhall. I've been in the more famous medieval bit, but this is a bit on the side, on the west side, which is new and rather sparkling. And the club, the Guildhall Dining Club, is on the third floor. All very well organised, beautifully organised. Somewhat surprising. I got given a glass of Madeira, which is apparently very significant in the city. There's all sorts of reasons for you.
Is Madeira like a sweet wine?
It is, yes.
Like a Sauterne?
Yeah, sort of, yes. Bit darker, muddier looking. I hadn't had a glass of Madeira for must
really
have been
not a fan
30,
of dessert
40
wines.
Years.
That's because they just give you a terrible headache.
Well, no, I didn't have very much.
It's
very, very interesting.
That sounds nice.
And Other than that, I've just been true criming, I think, pretty much.
Never enough true crime.
Yeah, can't get enough true crime.
Well, thank you. Thank you to all the people that help us, our producer Sam Brain, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Jeffrey for all the hard work. Oh, Audio Boom for hosting us. Sorry, my brain's a bit foggy today. And to you, the listeners, without you, we're nothing.
Absolutely, and that let me endorse that. Without you, the listeners, to whom we are literally devoted, this podcast would be nothing. We don't have a great platform on the BBC, or we just do it because we love doing it, and it's been like that from the beginning, and it still is. It's a labour of absolute delight. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Mo, for suggesting it. And as I often say, and I think of it particularly when you think of Janet Brown, bad things happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.